Well, hello and welcome to the Profit Express. I am Tim Healy, and you're invited to join me each week as we have some amazing entrepreneurs, experts, and industry leaders who are here to share their expertise to help you win the battle for business each and every day. We do it right here in the Profit Express. So thank you for being on board. Thank you for listening today. Now, while you're on Facebook, you can follow me in the show at the Profit Express page. And you can follow me in the show on Twitter at Radio Tim Healy. That's at Radio Tim Healy. So thanks for jumping on board today. Now, you might not know it, but you and I are at the forefront of a societal change not seen since the Industrial Revolution. That's right. What's behind this revolution? Artificial intelligence. That's right. AI is on the verge of completely reshaping how businesses market to you. And today, as you are reading through emails, shopping online, and visiting your favorite social media sites, sophisticated AI algorithms are scraping, logging, and cross-referencing who you are and how to best connect with you on an emotional level to get you to buy, buy, buy. That's right. So whether you are a marketer or a consumer, don't go anywhere, because today's guest is a thought leader, a technologist, and author of the new book, a really, really interesting read. It's called The Invisible Brand, and he's William Ammerman. And it's all about marketing in the age of automation, big data, and machine learning. Now, the great news for marketers is concerning news for consumers, no doubt. But William and I are going to explore how the next revolution is likely to play out and how it's going to impact you. So it's a pleasure to welcome aboard the Profit Express technologist and author of the new book, Invisible Brand, and he is William Ammerman. William, how are you today?
I'm good. It's nice to be on.
Well, my pleasure. Thanks for being on. And I tell you, it's a topic that the book brings up a number of insights into marketing, into technology, into big data that are, in some instances a little bit alarming. In some instances, they're fascinating as to what they can do for business and for marketing. So this is one of those rare topics where you really get to talk about, privacy issues and changing how we're marketed to and consumer behavior all in one. And you did a great job kind of telling that story in your book, The Invisible Brand. Now, one of the key terms in your book is psychotechnology. I kind of want to start with that. How would you define that for us, William?
So psychotechnology is actually a combination of two words, psychological and technology. Mm-hmm. And as I was writing the book and thinking about the fact that we're now dealing with technology that operates on us psychologically, it occurred to me that it was important to give that a name so that people could talk about it. And I believe that society is, it's high time that we had this conversation openly and said, what does it mean for us to be interacting with technology that can actually change our behaviors and change who we are and how we think?
Now, is this a phrase that you've coined, psychotechnology?
Yeah, so psychotechnology came to me as the result of my thinking on the confluence of four major trends that all of us are experiencing. Mm-hmm. And the first of those is that our information is becoming personalized. We all experience personalized information originally through advertising. Mm. You and I are sitting next to each other at JFK Airport, and we're looking at a website for the New York Times. And you're going to see ads for Little League Baseball, and I'm going to see ads for, travel vacations in North Carolina. And those ads are there because of our behaviors, because of what we've done and what we've viewed and what we're interested in. And the ability for this customization of information to be personalized down to you at an individual level is something that is a trend that is shaping a lot of the technology that's coming with artificial intelligence.
Are we at the point, or can we make the statement or the comment that, mass targeting is done with, or is it just completely inefficient at this point?
Right. So, I grew up in the age when everything was broadcast media. You know, the radio, the television, the newspaper, everything was delivered en masse to everyone at the same time. We all read the same, you know, New York Times. We all listened to the same CBS Evening News. We all listened to the same NPR. And now we're receiving information when we want it, and oftentimes we're receiving just the information that we like. So we've gone from receiving the information we need to receiving the information we like. And that's a big change. That opens up a, you know, kind of a Pandora's box of creating echo chambers in our lives where we just get echoed back the information that we want rather than maybe what we need. I tell students sometimes when I lecture at colleges, you know, if you find someone who you agree with 100% of the time, marry them, but don't get your news from them, right? You know, because really, you know, yeah. You don't want to agree with your news all the time. There's got to be some challenge there. There's got to be some information that challenges your thinking. And maybe you don't want that in a marriage, but maybe you want that from your news provider. You want to be challenged. And if you're only consuming information that you like, I think that's detrimental.
Is it true that, you know, probably one of the most famous, you know, AI devices, Alexa, let's call it, is it true that Alexa and other machines like, I'll say her, you know, I'm saying her, right? I'm giving, you know, are they connecting with human beings on an emotional level at this point?
So there's a really important study that came out very recently in which a number of participants were asked to interact with a voice user interface. They were asked to talk to a little robot. And in the course of that conversation, they developed kind of an empathetic relationship with that device. And at the end of the study session, they were told to turn the device off. And for some of the participants, the control group, they were just able to reach over and turn the device off, no big deal. Mm-hmm. But for the study group, the device protested. It said, "Please don't turn me off. I'm scared of the dark." And remarkably, a huge number of the participants refused to turn the device off because they had developed this kind of empathetic relationship. And so that's where we are today. We have empathy for these devices, and increasingly as we communicate with these devices using human-like anthropomorphic speech, we're going to be increasingly in this orb of influence that these devices exercise over us. And so that creates two opportunities. One, it creates a huge opportunity for marketers to tap into and influence us through our devices, but it also opens up the ability to hack us, to actually have influence over us in some negative ways. And so while this is both an opportunity and a risk, my job, I feel, is to explain and help people understand the technology so that they can both take advantage of the opportunities while protecting themselves from those risks.
Wow. So I guess I'm not trying to push you into an answer. So I guess the answer is yes, if we're showing empathy towards the machine, no?
We are. And if you don't mind, I'll share an anecdote. It's from the book.
Sure.
I have a lovely couple that lives next door to me, and they have a young son. This is a couple of years ago. And while I was writing the book, they invited some friends, neighbors over for cocktails by their pool. And I was enjoying a glass of red wine sitting, you know, by the pool. And their young son, who was then about four, he came over and he tugged at my sleeve like he wanted me to go, you know, play a game or something. And I was, frankly, I was reluctant. I was quite comfortable. And his mother, you know, looked at me and gave me this reassuring nod like, "Yeah, go ahead. It's okay." You know, I was worried I was getting lured into a game of Candyland or something.
Yeah, right, right.
But,
yeah.
But she, you know, she kind of, you know, encouraged me to go with him. And so he took me in the kitchen, and there on the kitchen counter, they had Alexa sitting on the counter in the kitchen.
Right.
And, you know, Liam, this little boy, you know, stands on his tippy toes and he puts his hands on the counter on either side of Alexa. And he's bouncing up and down on his, you know, he's pure joy and excitement. And he says, "Alexa, play Star Wars." And Alexa dutifully responds, you know, "John Williams, 1977, the theme from Star Wars." Duh,
right.
Plays the theme from Star Wars. And, you know, look on this little kid's face is just priceless. He's thrilled. And that lasted about 10 seconds. And then he was on to Finding Nemo or whatever the next one was. And I was sitting there watching this. Right. And I was fascinated. I was already writing the book. And I was thinking, you know, we develop speech at a very early age. We start talking when we're a year, year and a half old. Mm-hmm. We don't develop reading as a skill, like sophisticated reading, until we're, you know, 4, 5, 6 years old. So navigating a voice interface comes a lot more naturally. So here's a boy who hasn't learned to read yet, but he's fully capable of operating a voice user interface. And while I'm having this kind of inner monologue, while I'm kind of fascinated by the process, the most unexpected thing happened. He said, "Alexa, I love you," in this kind of enamored cherubic voice. And I was stunned. I stopped in my tracks and everything just seized up in my brain. And I looked up and his mom had this kind of pained expression. She had been, you know, adoring and like watching her son, you know, put Alexa through her paces. And suddenly she had this pained, almost jealous expression on her face. And just in an instant, I caught a glimpse of it before she kind of turned and walked back out onto the patio. And I was left standing there. And of course, you know, the little boy is still, you know, bouncing on his heels, you know, leading Alexa through the next music selection. And I was just reeling. You know, I had been stunned. And I thought, wow, okay, this is something different. I was completely not expecting this expression of love to come, you know, from this little boy for this inanimate object, this disembodied voice emanating from this smart speaker on the counter.
Now how old was Liam?
Prepared me for that.
How old was his boy?
He was 4 at the time.
He was 4.
Yeah, he was 4.
Now, you tell this story, and it's an amazing story, you know, for the show as it relates to your book. And as I'm hearing it, you know, your first reaction is, oh, that's so cute. And then you're like, wait a second. You know, and just me as, you know, the host of the Prophet Express, I'm listening as a consumer, as a parent, and like, is it disturbing? Is it creepy? You know, and I think it almost kind of creeped up on us without even knowing that you have these devices that everybody can fall in love with because they're so amazing, because you can say, hey, Alexa, you know, who won the 1985 World Series, right? Or can you play me Star Wars? So sure, they're awesome in their capability, but then all of a sudden we show empathy for them. That is amazing.
Right. So now you've got an empathetic relationship with a device that is designed to learn how to persuade you with personalized information. Right? It knows about you. It knows who you are. It knows what you like. It knows what you look for on the internet. It probably knows things that you wouldn't share with your, you know, with your spouse about you, you know? And so suddenly you've got this relationship with this device, and you've got to be thinking, wait a minute, when it answers me, who is really answering? What is this voice I'm listening to? And then you've got to start thinking through the device and beyond it and start to see the shadows of the brands, the politicians, mm-hmm. the governments mm-hmm. that are trying to influence you through this device. And my mission in writing The Invisible Brand mm-hmm. was to give people some tools to start seeing the invisible, to start being able to picture these hidden forces that are already operating in our lives.
Well, that's the interesting point, already operating. And if you're just tuning in, this is The Prophet Express. Today's guest is technologist and author of the brand new book, which is a great read on artificial intelligence. The book is The Invisible Brand, my guest, William Emmerman, and it's all about marketing in the age of automation, big data, and machine learning. And, you know, again, this is one of those, you know, I'm fortunate on The Prophet Express to have a lot of different topics and authors and experts on, but this is really one of the interesting ones because there's so many implications in artificial intelligence and big data. Now, geo-marketing, that's something I've read about, I've spoken about on previous shows. How is it, William, how are consumers interacting with geo-marketing today?
Great question. Our devices are location aware. Our cars are location aware. Our telephones, our phones, our mobile devices are location aware. Even our computers have IP addresses that are very related to physical locations on Earth. So locating you and understanding where you are in the real world is very important to understanding what you're doing and who you are and what your interests are. If we see you on a golf course with your cell phone every Thursday, we can predictably say that you might be a consumer that buys golf apparel and golf clubs. If we see that you go to Yankee Stadium on a regular basis, we might want to sell you, you know, baseball merchandise or sports tickets. So, you know, the who you are is very influenced by where you are. And we can learn a lot about people. So from the perspective of marketers, marketers love to be able to identify where people have been. If we're looking for people who are interested in, you know, buying diesel truck decals, or somebody who's interested in, you know, hunting rifles, we can look at where they go in the physical world, and we can make determinations. If they go to, they attend gun shows, if they attend, you know, sports rallies, if they attend, you know, state fairs, we're learning something about you from your attendance at those events. We also have a lot of technology in stores that tells us what aisle you're in and what you're looking at, what you're standing in front of, right?
That,
so think about that. You go to the grocery store, and there are these devices, they're Bluetooth-enabled devices.
Sure.
That are basically, they're beacons, and most of the time, they're buried up in the ceiling tiles of the grocery store. And those beacons are looking at your mobile device. Your mobile device is constantly transmitting a little Bluetooth signal, if you got your Bluetooth turned on, and most of us do. And that little Bluetooth signal is transmitting a little user ID that just identifies your phone as, you know, user 12345. It doesn't give out your name, but it doesn't matter. We don't need your name if we have your device, right? So your device is going to be able to tell us a lot about you. And when we see you move from the, you know, the produce section to the magazine aisle to the pharmacy, we're tracking all of that. And when you get to the counter to make your purchase, there's another, you know, beacon at the counter that can then pair the movement of that device through the store with the basket of goods that was purchased at the counter. And we can watch all of that in detail, and then we can make assumptions about how people move through the store environment. We can make changes. We can test. We can move the milk to the front of the store, and we can see how that changes.
And how many times they passed the ice cream aisle, and then they finally went back. I mean, think about it. The data that was, you know, that marketers had when we were growing up, I mean, I'm in my late 40s, I'll speak for myself, but it was like, okay, male, female, ages 25 to 45, income of this, you went to this school. I mean, think of how completely, you know, one-dimensional the data that marketers 20, 30 years ago had compared to this. I mean, I'm hearing this, it's like mind-blowing.
Right, so take a convention center as a really crazy example. A convention center has very unique hyper-targeted conventions. You know, there's a concrete pourers convention and a truck drivers convention and a painters convention and a, you know, probably a hairstylist convention, right?
Sure.
So there are these conventions. And at a convention center, you're going to draw for 2, 3, 4 days. You're going to draw people from all over the country. You're going to bring them together in a very concentrated fashion. And you're going to present them with the latest in your, you know, the latest in concrete pouring technology. Well, you know, there may be a handful of people in the whole country who are really interested in concrete pouring, but they're all here together for 4 days at this convention center. What if we could capture all of the device IDs from their phones while they're there, and then for the rest of the year deliver ads for concrete mixing trucks or whatever, you know, concrete pouring people buy? So you can deliver ads based on the behaviors of people in the real world in ways that you wouldn't previously have been able to gather. You know, if you wanted to reach people through broadcast television and you wanted to reach everybody that was interested in concrete pouring, you'd have to buy, you know, TV time in every market in the U.S. But here, you can deliver targeted ads to people who attended the concrete pouring convention.
Yeah. Wow.
And your ability to stretch your dollar goes, you know, it goes much further when you're able to concentrate and target at that level.
It seems like it was going from hoping to knowing, you know, from the marketer's perspective. So if you're just listening right now, you're just tuning in, today's guest is William Ammerman. He's a technologist and author of the brand new book, The Invisible Brand, Marketing in the Age of Automation, Big Data, and Machine Learning. William, you have some time to stick around.
Love to.
Okay. Up next, when we come back and continue the conversation with William, AI, artificial intelligence, isn't just for the Starbucks and Targets of the world. We're going to talk about how smaller companies can get in on the action. Don't go anywhere. This is the Profit Express.